Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yep, we are Let's Go There with Sharon Ryan on the new Channel Q on the radio and radio.com. We are here for you daily, catching up on everything you might have missed throughout the day, from pop culture, current events, LGBTQ plus news, our crazy lives, and more. 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific weekdays. And guess what? You can hang out with us on Valentine's Day evening. That's why, right? Channel Q and the world famous Abby are doing Loveline's Valentine Hookup, where Dr. Chris will be broadcasting live from the Abbey on February 14th from 7 to 9 p.m., answering your sex, love, and dating questions. And there's going to be prizes, specialty drinks, and more. And even we might be stopping by after the show.
Oh, for sure. And who doesn't love free therapy, honey?
True. Well, head over to wearechannelq.com for more details. There you go. And now joining us on the show, we have got a queer Black activist making schools less racist, professor and author. She has a lot of titles under her belt.
Oh, yes, she does.
And she has a really cool book out called We Want to Do More Than Survive. I mean, not just cool, very interesting and relevant. Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Please welcome Dr. Bettina Love. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sharon Ryan. I really appreciate it for having me on.
Yes. So tell us about this book. Quite the title.
Which I'm so happy. And I saw a picture of you. And let me just say this out and get this out of the open. You are fine.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
You started an interview, Ryan.
I saw the long, I was like, I don't know. I couldn't tell if they were dreads or braids, but I was like, yes, please.
There's 20 years in the game. Locks for 20 years.
Yes, it's beautiful. Okay, so yeah, tell us about your book.
Thank you so much. So I started writing a book. So my other area of research is hip-hop, and I started writing this book on hip-hop, and I was going to do this whole thing on hip-hop civics, and then Trump got elected.
Oh.
And I had to throw everything away, and I wanted to try and write something that meant something to teachers, and I wanted to write something where teachers who thought the rhetoric of hate, the rhetoric of division was okay.
Hmm.
And how do you teach Black and brown children and still support that type of rhetoric?
Interesting,
so I wanted to write a book that really got at the heart of that and talked about Black and brown children's issues, but also their beauty.
I love that. I think especially because I grew up in the South. I'm originally from Nashville. And I think this was something that I feel like I dealt with in the educational system of one. I feel like a lot of either marginalized, communities, being Black, being brown, being gay, all these things where if teachers are not educated on how to deal with either certain demographics, it can be very hard for Black or brown students to feel like, hey, they actually want me to be here and learn and you know, gain something. So it's what is one thing in this book that is kind of, you know, like you're saying, you're helping teach teachers this, but how are you guiding that conversation when it comes to educators and understanding the Black and brown experience?
So I think the first thing I try to do in this book is really talk about the beauty of being Black and brown, and not this idea of the gimmicks of the grit and the resiliency, but to place it in a historical context. Who in their right mind tries to deal with racism for 400 years and you say that we don't have grit?
Right.
So I want teachers to try to reframe and rethink about the language they've been given. Or we have conversations that say, well, you know, we have an achievement gap in this country. We don't have an achievement gap. You had 250 years of slavery, 90 years of Jim Crow, 60 years of you saying you're going to do something and not living up to your promises. You can't say there's an achievement gap when you created the gap.
Mm.
And so one of the first things I try to do with the book is to really challenge teachers to understand language, or we call students at risk. At risk of what?
Yeah.
Or they're underserved. By whom? Like, we never complete these sentences. So that's really one of the first things I try to do is help teachers understand how the language that we use, even when we're trying to do our best to understand our students, doesn't allow us that room. And then the second thing I really try to do in the book is tell teachers to get involved. You know, that's what abolitionist teaching is about, is to get involved. Loving your students or being kind to your students or, you know, Ryan, you're like, you're from the South, saying bless your heart, that's not enough.
That's very true. That's like a very good go-to. That's a good...
Right, bless, you know, bless his heart.
Yeah. And honestly, that's like kind of like saying no shade, because it can be very right. shady, depending on the country person you meet. That's a very shady thing to say.
Yes, it is.
Now, Dr. Bettina Love, again, is joining us. We are talking about her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Now, I just find this really interesting and important because guess what? If you're not an educator, you still have kids and, mm-hmm. you know, who are in school, and then also kids just dealing with other kids. And we need to bring everyone together. And like this idea that we're all separate because we're in different communities or from, you know, in different places in life or yeah. race or this or that. Like, it's this idea that we're siloed. We live apart when all, you know, we're a collective consciousness. So
right.
I guess, you know, coming from that position, what lessons can we learn from abolitionist teaching?
So that's I love the entry. I love how you set that up because you're exactly right. And the reason why I called this book Abolitionist is number one is where I'm from. I was born and raised in upstate New York, Rochester, New York. And Rochester, New York is, you know, a hop and a skip from Canada. Mm-hmm. So when you got to Rochester, New York, as an enslaved African, you were close to freedom. But the reason why I wanted to talk about abolitionists, because abolitionists took risks for other people. They were black, they were brown, yeah. they were Latino, they were Asian. I mean, we think about this country just being black and white. No, it wasn't. They were indigenous, and all those people got together and took risks. Some took small risks, some took big risks. Some were bakers, some were bankers, some were writers, some were teachers, some were doctors. They were all types of people from all different ethnicities, from all different religions,
yeah.
who took risks for freedom for black people.
See,
and that's what we have to get back to.
We're continuing this really interesting conversation with Dr. Bettina Love, who is a queer black activist making schools less racist.
Which I love.
Yeah, what an important mission.
I mean, especially during Black History Month, where everybody has been trying it.
Also, check out her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you all for having me. This is great.
Oh, yay. No, of course. So I know the conversations of privilege and what that looks like can be very difficult to have with a lot of people, especially non-people of color. How are mm-hmm. you tackling that in your book in making sure it's a message of inclusion and where people don't feel like they are
attacked?
Kind of, yeah, are attacked.
Right. So you know what? Since like I'm a researcher, that's what I do full time. I really try to lean on like other people's work for that. And there's some really good white folk who are talking about that. There's a great book called White Fragility. And the one thing that she talks about in this book, Robin DiAngelo, is that you have to let white folks address their emotions. And you just can't think you're going to enter one conversation about racism and privilege and then everything's going to be good. This is the country that needs therapy.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, I always say that if black folks ever get reparations, we need therapy, and white folks need therapy. That needs to be part of the reparation package.
That's amazing. And listen, my family's from Canada, and I had to have a conversation about privilege with them at my dinner table on Friday night. And let me tell you, I just scratched the surface. I thought I was getting somewhere, but, mm-hmm. you know, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, honey. It's
we
rough.
Do.
And it's important that, you know, I think that people of color have that conversation with themselves and their communities, but mm-hmm. the conversations that need to be had are the conversations with both sides, because that's the only way change happens is when we're there for each other and to make it happen together.
So one thing I try to talk about in the book is, and there's a lot of good language from the activist community about this, is, you know, we've had allies, and allies are cute. You know, those are people who come to the rallies, and those are the people who know all the language. They read all the books, and they'll tell you all the different labels that they have, and that's great. But what we need are co-conspirators.
Oh.
Come on. You better
say that word. I'm making notes right now.
Cher's over here making notes.
I'm not going to call myself an ally anymore.
You know, here's the thing. I'm honestly so happy that I'm not the only black person educating Cher today, so this is beautiful.
Continue.
You know, it's Canada. It is Canada. It is
right,
Canada.
Right.
So, yeah, I talk in a book about, you know, what it means to be a co-conspirator, what it means to take risks for somebody, what it means to walk in a room and be quiet and just listen. You know, as the old folks say, get your lesson.
Yes.
So just sit there and get your lesson and listen to us, understand us, and then study. Don't come to rallies and come to meetings and you haven't done your own internal work. All you're going to do is recenter yourself, because that's what whiteness does. And so I really talk in the book about what it means to be an ally and what it means to be a co-conspirator, because abolitionists were co-conspirators. And so allies don't get us far enough. And I use the example of Bree Newsom, who took down that flag in South Carolina.
Yeah.
But what we don't talk about is James Tyson that was with her, the white man.
The people around her.
The people around her and the risk that they took. And there was a moment when the police said they were going to electrocute Bree Newsom. And that white man said, you know what? I'm going to put my hand on this flagpole. And just by him putting his hand on the flagpole, that saved that black woman's life.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and we've even seen that touch on Hollywood, where, you know, Octavia Spencer said her white co-star actually spoke up for her to get more money. And it's one of those things where it's like you have to be able to risk your comfortability to bring everyone around you to the same level where you are. And I think that's why that's so important. And what is the real definition of an ally? Because I feel like we have these conversations. But like you said, I feel like some people just see it as like, oh, yeah, I did my good deed for the day.
It's a checklist.
Yeah,
I mean, this is...
Social justice is not a checklist.
This is so interesting. And how, I guess, thoughts on, I guess, our day-to-day lives. I mean, like, how can we be more of co-conspirators? Like, I'm interested because this is, like, the first time I've heard that. And I'm really, I'm interested in that. And this is something I'm sure a lot of people are listening and saying, like, oh, wow, checking themselves right now.
Right. So I think one of the first things is to check your privilege, is to walk into spaces thinking about your privilege. And then I talk about it in the book is that, you know, white folks, and I also talk about men too, who walk around with this privilege, black men and white men.
Yes.
I talk about them and you know, straight folks. I talk about, you know, when you have this privilege, it doesn't have to be like I'm going to go and lay my body down. That's great, but it could be the everyday thing. If you run an organization and you look around the table and there's no people of color, then you're not doing your job. If you are the HR person and you know that every person of color is being underpaid, then you can do something about that. Right. That are the little small day-to-day things that we could be doing to help folks out. You got to want to see black folks win.
Yeah. I want to see everyone win.
The fact that you came on Channel Q and started preaching, I love it.
Again, I want to let everyone know where to find you. Dr. Bettina Love, check out her book, We Want to Do More Than Survive, Abolitionist Teaching and the Pursuit of Educational Freedom. We're going to have a link on our website.
Yes.
Yeah, we are channelq.com. And where can they find you on Instagram?
Yeah, so Twitter and Instagram is Be Love Soul Power.
Well, love it. Thank you so much for all
Thank
that wisdom.
You
and you made us definitely think about a lot today and more action, right? I feel like more action needs to happen and just understanding where our place in all of this. So thank you for that.
Thank you both for having me. This was wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, you're so sweet. Love it.